Now Monitor brings you Meet the Press, the prize-winning interview program produced by Lawrence Spivak. Tonight there are two guests, Senator Henry M. Jackson, chairman of the Democratic National Committee, and Senator Thurston B. Morton, chairman of the Republican National Committee. Ready for the unrehearsed conference of four of America's top news reporters. Here's the moderator of Meet the Press, Ned Brooks.
Our guests today are Republican Chairman Morton and Democratic Chairman Jackson. In order to divide our time as evenly as possible between them, we'll ask the members of our panel to alternate their questions. Each of our guests will have the privilege of commenting briefly on the answers of the other. The clock will determine who has the final question. Senator Jackson won the toss for the first question, and we'll start with Mr. Spivak.
Senator Jackson, you Democrats have been very critical of the Eisenhower administration for being more concerned with the budget than with the nation's needs. And yet the Eisenhower administration has spent an average of $72 billion a year, while the Truman average budget was only $48 billion. Now, how can you condemn President Eisenhower for being budget conscious without also condemning President Truman, who spent an average of $23 billion a year less?
Well, in the area of national defense, which of course is the crucial thing that we've been discussing in this campaign, broad area of national security as well as defense, point that's really relevant is that under the Truman administration, we spent a greater percentage of our gross national product for national security, national defense, than we have under the Eisenhower administration.
But, Senator,
the overall expenditures are up in this administration, but they have related to matters that are not in the broad area of national security.
But, Senator, even on the matter of defense, the Democratic Digest of October admits, and these are their words, the average annual military expenditures under the Eisenhower administration was $44.3 billion. More than double the average under Truman.
Well, that's not, they're including foreign aid and other items. The present and the current defense expenditure bill is about $40 billion. So the point I want to make very clearly is, of course, that costs have gone up, but in relation to our threat, the Eisenhower administration has not been doing the job. It's a relevant thing that you have to deal with in relation to the Soviet Union and the progress that they have made.
Senator Morton signals that he'd like to comment.
Well, of course, in the peacetime years of the Truman administration, nothing like the percentage of our gross national product was spent in national defense that's being spent today. I mean, that's obvious. The Truman years included war years, when our defense expenditures were up. There's been nothing like this peacetime expenditure that we're now making in the field of national defense.
Mr. Steele.
Senator Morton, there are only 2 weeks of effective campaigning remaining. I wonder if you would tell us in as specific terms as possible how Vice President Nixon stands in his race for election. Is he ahead or behind, and where?
Well, I'd say that this is in the pivotal states. It's very close, and I think the Vice President a little bit ahead. There still seems to be a large undecided vote. Now, this talk we're hearing now about the great Kennedy movement is, and the Kennedy swing is just what we got in the primaries. He always started out by saying, oh, well, it's going to be a tough race, and then they developed this bandwagon thing in the last few days, really. We see that today developing, but I've been in 14 states in the last 18 days. I've been in 34 states since the convention. And I think that we're timing this right, that we are on the move, and I think that you're going to see Nixon take at least five of the first seven states in electoral vote, and of course many of the smaller states.
Chairman Morton, what about specifically New York and California?
As of today, I'd say we're ahead in California with still a pretty good undecided vote, and very slightly ahead in New York with an undecided vote, although there are polls there that differ. Polls that I put a good deal of credence in show us slightly ahead. The New York Daily News poll shows us substantially behind. But I think that with all forces going in New York and the effort that we're going to make in the next few days, I think we can swing New York.
Senator Jackson has...
I think we're ahead in New York and in California. We're not being complacent because we do not want our people to get Deweyitis. This is dangerous. But we do feel that we're ahead in both of those states and in the large industrial states.
Mr. McCormick.
Senator Jackson, one thing has puzzled me about your behavior as chairman of the National Committee. In your releases, you've emphasized very heavily corruption or misdemeanors, malfeasances in the Eisenhower administration, but actually neither of your candidates has. Why haven't you pushed that more as an issue?
Well, I think we have tried to be very fair and very objective about it and simply related the record as it exists today. Senator Kennedy made a very fine and I thought statesmanlike talk on the whole question of ethics and government. It was a profound message, a profound speech last week. I thought it hit the point excellently.
But it wasn't specific, was it?
Well, I don't see any need to belabor and hammer old cases that some of them are now pending. Two defendants, I understand, in two different sections of the country had their trials postponed for reasons of some lack of mental capacity to go forward with the trial. There are two current ones. But I don't see any need to belabor the point. We have simply tried to keep the record clear and straight.
Senator Morton?
Well, some of the principal figures in the last administration have served jail sentences. That's all I've got.
Mr. Drury?
Senator Morton, Senator Kennedy is making much of American prestige or lack of it at the present time. Do you feel that the administration should release its various official studies on American prestige abroad, even though they might show it to be somewhat lower than the vice president is saying in his campaign?
I think you've got to be careful and not release one thing that's a segment of a pattern. Now, we have various measures for prestige. You can take your votes in the United Nations. You can take polls that you might take. Take any number of things that build up to how we're doing in the world. I think to put the emphasis on any one of these five or six things that show what our prestige is would probably be non-productive. Now, prestige is one thing, a popularity contest is another. Now, the thing I think we've got to be careful of is that we don't try to run our foreign policy based on trying to win a popularity contest. There are certain principles that you have to stand on. You have to stand on principle, even though perhaps it's an unpopular principle, but it may be right. We've had to do that. That's characterized this administration and its conduct of foreign affairs, I think. We've stood definitely on principle. Certainly it wasn't easy to go after the British and the French. In the Suez is an example, in the Suez case. But we've said that we should settle these things at the bargaining table and not at the point of a bayonet. If our oldest friends and truest allies choose to do otherwise, we have to stand on our principle, regardless of the popularity issue.
You don't feel there might be a presumption that if these reports are not released, that they may be damaging to our prestige standing in the world?
No, I think that the most damaging thing to our prestige is this business of which Senator Kennedy and his colleagues are doing of downgrading this country, making it a second-rate power economically, militarily, morally, when the facts prove otherwise.
Senator Jackson has a comment.
I disagree completely. Senator Javis just said to say that our prestige has not declined is silly. Governor Nelson Rockefeller Brothers Fund, a long list of Republicans have been pointing this out. Three presidential reports should be released. The Gaither Committee, all these others. Vice President Nixon said that this report should be released. I'm sure it won't be before election. dealing with our prestige. And if there's no question about it, and if our prestige is so high, why don't they release it?
Mr. Steele.
Senator Jackson, in that same area, each of the presidential candidates charges that the policies advanced by the other could recklessly lead to war. Senator Kennedy does it in the case of the offshore Chinese islands. Vice President Nixon does it in the case of Cuba. Are you satisfied that this kind of talk can go forward without without damaging our foreign policy, regardless of who's elected president?
Well, I think we should be very careful in discussing matters in this area. One of the problems in a presidential campaign is that both sides may engage in things that shouldn't be said. I do want to say, however, that it was the vice president who finally retreated on his position on Kimoi and Matsu. He insisted at the outset that he, in effect, was going to modify the treaty. He said we should defend Kimoi and Matsu regardless. Now, under the treaty with the Nationalist Government of China, we have no commitment to defend those islands at all. We guarantee only the integrity of Formosa and the Pescadores Island. But Mr. Nixon took the position that on principle, we should at all costs defend those two islands. And they're not offshore islands, incidentally, they're inshore.
Senator, but what about the basic damage that can be done to a country's policy by two political candidates saying that the election of the other might mean war? Now, do you think this is right or do you think it's wrong?
Well, I think that in a campaign, you have to take certain calculated risks, and I think you should tell the truth, and you should lay it on the line as best you can. You can't avoid it in a free society.
Senator Morton, do you agree?
Well, I certainly think that the unsophisticated position taken by Senator Kennedy and in the question of the Kimoi Matsu, in the question of Cuba, and in the question of going back really to Libya, and in the question of his statements to what the president should have said to Mr. Khrushchev, shows that he just doesn't have the comprehension. He's a student of history, but he hasn't learned the lessons of history, and he's run full circle on this Kimoi Matsu business. The difference between the president's position and the vice president's is nil. They're the same. And Senator Kennedy, who voted for the, or said he was for the Lehman Amendment, has gone full circle, now supports Mr. Eisenhower because he figures that that was the popular political thing to do.
Mr. Spivak.
Senator Morton, I'd like to ask you a budget question, too. The Republicans have long claimed credit for being conservative and careful about money matters. And yet, Truman's average budget was $48 billion, as I said a minute ago, and the Eisenhower average budget was $72 billion, a difference of some $23 billion a year. Now, why do the Republicans call Democratic spending fiscal irresponsibility, but when they spend the money, call it fiscal responsibility?
Number one, the peacetime defense budgets under the Truman administration, I was in the Congress at that time, I think we're in the neighborhood of $14, $15 billion, and today it's $40 billion. There's where your difference occurs. Your difference occurs right there. Number two, you have an expanding population, and these programs that we have, welfare programs that we have, obviously have built-in escalators, and they go up as your population goes up. The important thing is this, that the federal government today, percentage-wise, is spending far less of the gross national product than it did when President Eisenhower came into power in 1953.
Well, may I have my other question? You also, of course, said that you were going to stop inflation, and yet you've had an increase, I believe, of about 11%, and I think out of 13 out of 17 months, the cost of living index has gone up during an administration that promised to stop inflation.
Yes.
What is your answer to that?
Well, there are a lot of things that we should do that we haven't been able to do. One of the reasons is a Democratic Congress. But we did hold it to 11% in a period of 7.5 years, and the Democrats was 37% in a similar period.
Well, not to throw figures around, but the truth is that we cut $8 billion off of Mr. Eisenhower's budget over the period they've been in office. The second point I'd like to make, this administration ran up the largest peacetime deficit in history in the fiscal year ending in 59. They had a deficit of almost $13 billion. And in the area of defense, the key thing is the relation of our power to that of the Soviets. And during the Truman administration, we did have the ability to offset Soviet power. And during the period that we've been going through the last 8 years, we have not had same relation of power. That's the key thing. It's our power in relation to the Soviet Union. And they have not been spending enough money in the area of national defense to offset that.
Mr. Drury.
Senator Jackson, Senator Kennedy is advocating assistance to anti-Castro elements in Cuba, which might apparently lead to some sort of anti-Castro revolution. As a senator, do you support that position yourself, and do you think the Congress as a whole would support it if he were president?
I'm sure that the American people want to get rid of Castro one way or the other. We cannot tolerate, as we now have, a communist government 90 miles off of our coast. Mr. Kennedy made it very clear that he talked in terms of aid to the anti-Castro forces, and surely we want to rally the forces of Free Cuba against Mr. Castro in a responsible way, and we should encourage people who are against communism. The analogy that the vice president gave about Guatemala on the program the other day, anyone familiar with the situation in Guatemala knows that that was not the case at all. He mentioned that Guatemala situation was solved by taking firm stand and working through the Organization of American States, but Guatemala didn't overthrow its communist regime in that way. I don't care to elaborate further how it happened, but any thoughtful student of the problem knows that that was not the case.
You don't think that assistance such as Senator Kennedy advocates would bring Russian assistance to Castro on the other side?
The Soviets have already intervened.
Well, I mean more actively than that.
Well, they're shipping, their 90-ton Stalin tanks are being landed 90 miles from our shores right now, and they're pouring arms into Cuba. This is the whole point, and I think the American people back up Senator Kennedy 100% in opposing the intervention which has already occurred by the Soviet bloc and the Chinese Communist bloc. They're also intervening.
Senator Morton?
Well, I might say that the only way you're going to solve this Cuban thing is through the Organization of American States. We can't go in unilaterally, as we did in certain countries at the beginning of this century. And I think it's a very dangerous and irresponsible thing to say that you're going to give aid to all exiles, wherever they might be, as Senator Kennedy did. I think you've got the whole Latin American community in a turmoil on this thing. And I might say, I hope that a fifth debate can be arranged between the two on this Cuban problem.
Amen. I'm all for it.
I'm for it, too, and so is the Vice President.
We agree, gentlemen.
Well, we got news here.
Mr. McCormick.
Senator Morton, when I covered the Vice President for a while in his campaign, everywhere, of course, he emphasized the fact that everything is just hunky-dory in this country, our economy is sound, everything's fine. And yet, within the last 10 days, we've had a series of almost disastrous statistics about our economic condition, particularly. Do you think that's a good, an appealing political line for the Vice President to take?
Well, in the first place, I disagree with you that he has emphasized that everything's hunky-dory. He's always said that the record we have is one on which we should build and should not be complacent with or satisfied with. I mean, he turns to the figure of employment, for instance. I think it's at a close to an all-time high, but he says that's not enough. We've got to go forward from there. I don't think any of us, Democrats or Republicans, are ever going to be, I hope we'll never be satisfied with where we are, that we're always going to want to find broader horizons. But I do think that the record is a good record, and I don't think that either the Vice President or any other responsible Republican wants to see that as the end record. That is a point from which to go, a point from which to depart. And surely, it's a better record than, let's go back to 1939. We keep talking about how Mr. Roosevelt did this, that, and the other with a much smaller workforce. He had almost twice the unemployed that we have today, and it was the only the beginning of World War II that changed that. I think for a peacetime economy, it's been a very good record.
Well, apparently I misreported some of the vice president's speeches then, about, I guess, 40 or 50 in total, because I certainly understood him to say that we were in very fine shape and rolling along beautifully.
I agree with that we are in good shape, but I also say that he has said in every speech that this is not a record to be satisfied with. This is a platform from which to move forward. Now, he has said that in each of the debates and probably in most of his public speeches.
Senator Jackson seems not to agree.
Well, obviously we're not in good shape now. We're in a recession. Steel is at 54% of capacity. We have about 4 million people unemployed. All of the various economic indicators are pointing downward. The drop in the gross national product, which is one of the key indices to our economy, was announced just a few days ago. Car loadings are off. All these things point very clearly in one direction, and that is that the economy is sliding downward. You can call it a rolling adjustment, or you can call it the economy is moving sideways, but it's moving down.
Mr. Spivak.
Senator Jackson, recently Senator Johnson, the Democratic vice presidential candidate, in discussing a cable from Mr. Khrushchev, said this: Mr. Khrushchev obviously did not understand U.S. bipartisanship on foreign policy. Now, if it's true that we have a bipartisan foreign policy, how can the Democrats fairly blame the Republicans alone for what happened in Cuba? Don't they have to take some of that blame?
No, I don't agree on that at all, Mr. Spivak. The point is that when we talk about a bipartisan foreign policy, it doesn't mean that we don't debate the various issues that relate to the formulation of policy from time to time. In the case of Cuba, the Congress was not appropriately informed as to what was going on down there. You mentioned Cuba, and I want to be specific. I know personally that the briefings that I had from appropriate authorities within the executive branch of the government certainly played this situation down. The executive branch has control of all the information. We found out later, as a result of Senate hearings, that the two ambassadors, Republican ambassadors serving in Cuba, were unable to get their point through to the State Department. The State Department seemed to take the position that Mr. Castro was all right. And it turned out that, of course, he's not all right, and apparently aid was given to Castro. Now, this is a pretty serious indictment. This happens to come from the two Republican ambassadors that served in Cuba during this period.
Well, now, Senator, you are, as I remember it, you Democrats were very unhappy when the Republicans tried to pin the loss of China and the Korean War on you. And I believe your answer was this was bipartisan foreign policy, and that both sides, if either was to blame or neither was to blame. Well, now you turn around and you do the same thing on Cuba to the Republicans that they tried to do to you. Do you think that this is...
No, not at all. In the case of China, in the Republican Congress, the 80th Congress, Senator Vandenberg made a very basic decision. Mr. Truman asked for military liaison officers, I believe, right down to the company level. And all of that was cut out because the Republican Party took the position, and I say Senator Vandenberg was a very able senator and a great statesman, took the position that we would not go that far in supporting Chiang's forces in China. And I think this may well have been a turning point in holding his forces in China. So it was a Republican Congress that made that decision. Case of Cuba, we were kept in the dark. We were not given this information. Apparently the State Department decided to cut it off. Now that's the record.
Gentlemen, we have about 2.5 minutes. Senator Morton, do you care to comment?
Well, I just want to say this. In the case of Cuba, I didn't hear any responsible Democrats speak out that we were doing wrong in Cuba, but I remember many responsible Republicans speaking out about our China policy. Now, Senator Kennedy himself made many trips to Cuba, and during the last 5 years, he's been down there probably as often as any member of the United States Senate. And he, on April the 3rd of this year and again in May of this year, agreed with the policies of this administration in regard to Cuba.
Mr. Steele.
Senator Morton, I want to get something tied down. Has Vice President Nixon told you that he will agree to a fifth debate?
I think he will, if we can work out the scheduling of it.
Have you talked to him about it? Has he said okay?
I haven't talked to him, but I think if you can confine it to Cuba, I'm going to see him tonight.
Oh, you want it confined to Cuba alone?
I would like to. I'd like to see it confined in this area of foreign policy, and especially Cuba, because I think this is dangerous. This Cuban business, this Kumoimatsu business, this business of dealing with Khrushchev, I think that this is a dangerous thing for our country, and I want to see it fully aired. And I think that he will meet him if we can keep it in this foreign policy area. Otherwise, I think the vice president can better spend his time by carrying this case to the people. Because to me, this is very important, this statement that Senator Kennedy, this position that Senator Kennedy takes about aiding all the exiles of the anti-Castro exiles.
Do I understand you will ask Vice President Nixon tomorrow night if he will participate in a fifth debate? Is that
I'll
correct?
I'll ask him tonight.
Senator Jackson?
Well, I'm amazed because I wouldn't think we'd want to gag our newspapermen in asking questions. When we go on this program, we don't know what's coming next, and I would think the Vice President would be willing to answer any questions in the field of foreign policy. Cuba is only one problem. It's a serious problem.
Take
but
it
I don't
all foreign policy then.
Well, yeah, but let's don't confine it just to
all right, let's
to
not Cuba. Let's take it all foreign policy. But you've got to admit, Scoop, that this thing, if it gets as repetitive as these last two have been, I don't think it's.
We're all for the debates. We feel that
it's
too. A very fine way of getting
it's the best free time I know
story over to the people.
Mr. McCormick.
Well, Senator Morton, you've been so forthright about this fifth debate. Why hasn't the vice president and his people spoken out sooner?
Well, now we've gotten it. This is the toughest scheduling thing I ever got into. We had to hold up what we were going to do, where we were going to send the candidates, everything else, waiting for these debates to gel. And if you'd had the correspondence and phone calls that I've had from irate national committeemen and state chairmen, you'd understand the necessity for trying to gel this. Now, it was gelled. Now, these things are getting repetitive. But I say that this problem that's been opened up in the last debate about this Cuban thing especially.
Senator, I'm sorry that I'm going to have to interrupt. We'll have to leave the debates for another time. Our thanks to our guests, Republican Chairman Morton and Democratic Chairman Jackson.
Monitor's thanks to Senator Henry M. Jackson, Chairman of the Democratic National Committee, to Senator Thruston B. Morton, Chairman of the Republican National Committee, and the Meet the Press panel, Robert McCormick of NBC News, John Steele of Time Life, Alan Drury of Reader's Digest, and Lawrence Spivak. Next week's guest will be Dr. Teresa Cazuzo, Cuba's alternate delegate to the United Nations, who recently announced her break with Fidel Castro. Meet the Press, celebrating its 16th anniversary on the air, is produced by Lawrence Spivak. You know, just a little care, a little thoughtfulness on your part, if you're in a forest area, can prevent the loss of valuable timber and watershed lands. Here are the four simple rules to observe. 1, crush out cigarette, cigar, and pipe ashes. 2, break matches in half after using. 3, drown all campfires, stir and drown again. And 4, find out the law about fire in the area before you start one. If everyone follows these rules, 9 out of 10 forest fires can be prevented. Monitor here, Ben Grauer too, and at the end of another half hour at Radio Central, the central thought in Central Radio at the end of the half hour is this. Remember not to forget to remember to say, portions of this program are pre-recorded. Bye-bye.